I love when Jesus in the Gospels is frank. I think we can often, because the version of the faith that's often presented today is a very politically correct version of the faith, so we want everyone to kind of feel welcome and warm and fuzzy, and that's, you know, everyone is welcome, of course, but at the same time, Jesus does have expectations, and Jesus does have standards. So while, yes, he welcomes everyone, like the woman caught in adultery, neither do I condemn you, but go and sin no more. So those are welcome, and I'm not condemning you, but at the same time, we have standards, as in I have standards as God. Don't sin anymore. So the Lord is able to balance this mercy and justice, this high spirit of welcome with a spirit of expectation. There's both. So it's not just, you know, everyone come in, do what you like, it's all good, let's just be happy. It's everyone come in and let's learn how to be saints. You know, let's make progress in this journey towards heaven, which involves pruning and involves regrowth and involves fruit and involves self-denial and involves learning how to love, and learning how to love and sacrifice will always go together. So learning how to love and the reality of living sacrifice will always go together, because I cannot ever learn to love unless I learn to sacrifice myself. I can't love and just have everything I want my way, in my time, as I would like it. That's not love. That's just being selfish. That's just putting yourself at the center of the universe and everything has to revolve around you. So that's not our calling. The Lord calls us together as a family, yes, that learns how to love. So Jesus, when needs be, he can very much be blunt and frank with those he's speaking to. So he says today, and I love this reading, when he says, as for human approval, this means nothing to me. I love it. Like, you know, as for human approval, this means nothing to me. Besides, I know you too well. You have no love of God in you. Yikes. I mean, again, nothing wrong with what Jesus is saying here. But imagine for him to say that, for him to know that, for him to see that in people. You know, I don't care about human approval, but I know you. I know you guys. And as for you, you've no love of God in you. I've come in the name of the Father, and you refuse to accept me. How can you believe, since you look to one another for approval, and you are not concerned with the approval that comes from the one God? You are not concerned with the approval that comes from the one God. I mean, that's some straight shooting there. And again, he's not wrong. These people are the ones who will try to kill, who will plot to kill him and then eventually bring about his death. So he's right. There is no love of God there. But it's a horrendous thing to hear from the Lord. I mean, it's horrendously true. How awful that would be if that were true of me. Is there love of God in me? Do you know, if the Lord were to look at my heart, like, what would he find there? Would he find a good religious facade that people are impressed with? Would he find some external observations of the faith that look good on the surface? Or in my heart of hearts, would he find love? A heart that actually loves him. Would he find that? So that's what the Lord is looking for. And again, it's so tragic in our first reading. We read from Exodus, where while the Lord is speaking to Moses, the people who he has just freed from the Egyptians, just freed from Egypt, just freed from slavery, just crossed the Red Sea with great miracles, great portents and signs and all of that. And now these people, as they're waiting for Moses, who's getting the Ten Commandments, in their impatience, they fashioned themselves a golden calf. Now, this was exactly the kind of rubbish that they had seen going on in Egypt. You know, the Egyptians who, with their various pagan faiths, had various pagan gods and various statues which they adored. And they brought this. God took the people out of Egypt, but it took them a generation to get Egypt out of the people. You know, what they had learned in Egypt, they continue to bring with them. The adoration, so the idolatry of molten, of a calf that they had fashioned themselves, or of deities that they had invented. So And the Lord, well, according to the reading, the Lord's wrath, his anger, blazes out. And Moses intercedes. So Moses prays. And he says, look, I mean, these are your chosen people. Do you really want all the rest of the world to say, ha, he freed them from Egypt just to get rid of them in the desert? So God relents. And so what do we see here? Well, we see the power of intercessory prayer. We see that effectively also that the power of priesthood. Moses would represent the priesthood. Their priest. What's the role of a priest? To make sacrifices on behalf of the people to God and to intercede for the people, to bring the prayers of the people to God. So we see a priestly role here. But we see also something in the people themselves, that what's going on here is the same battle that goes on for us. It's a battle of the heart. It's a battle for the heart. The Lord wants to win our hearts, and the enemy wants to win our hearts. So while we're waiting around for God and nothing seems to be happening, this is prime territory for the enemy then to intervene and say, well, you can see, God's not going to take care of you. Better take care of yourself. So what do you need to do? What do you need to do? How do you need to fix this one yourself? Because he's not going to take care of you. He's obviously busy, or he's, you know, taking care of what the Pope has on his plate today. But he doesn't take care of you, ordinary Joe Soap on the ground. God won't. So take care of yourself. Like, you have to take care of your own health and happiness and life. All those things you have to take care of. Maybe God will intervene at the end when you're, you know, dead or almost. And this is kind of the way we often live. Like, God isn't really interested in my daily life. He's not interested in my things, in my issues. And so we live a life very, very separate from him. Now the thing is then, when things go wrong, when things go a bit pear-shaped, when things, when we experience any sort of adversity or difficulty, we can immediately feel betrayed by God. Again, this is the battle for the heart. And as soon as something goes wrong, the enemy will pounce on that and say, well, there you go. God said he'd take care of you. Clearly didn't. So, you know, why pray? Why rely on him? He's let you down. He's let you down before. Actually, do you remember last year? Remember the year before? Remember the other time? Remember the other thing you failed in? Remember the other thing that didn't work out? And the list of difficulties in your life will come out. Enemy is, he's fantastic at that. He's got a very good memory. And he will then accuse God of letting you down in all of these various situations. And what can arise then within us is this almost sense of betrayal. I trusted you, God, and you let me down. Okay, there's a few things going on there. Firstly, did you actually trust him? Did you? Was this intention, this need, did you entrust it to God? Did you ask him for help? Did you pray? Or was this all of your doing? You know, you chose this way. You didn't get God involved at all. You made a hash of things, and now you're blaming God when he had nothing to do with any of those choices because you didn't bring him in. Then there's another situation where, yes, this is the will of God, and at times, yeah, difficulty comes our way. So, I mean, it is God's will that you get married. It is God's will to get married to that particular person. And then the in-laws happen to be very, very difficult. You know, which can happen. You know. And then, you know, you can feel a bit like torn, because now your wife is trying to be, you know, loyal to her family, but you're kind of in the middle going, well, like, they're not treating you well, or if it's about a will or whatever it is, all these things that happen. And you can feel then, you know, this tension, this almost anger inside. Lord, you called me to this marriage and now this is difficult. And you can feel a bit betrayed by him. Why have you led me into this darkness? Why have you led me into this valley of tears? You led me here because I know you did. I did pray about this, and you did want me to marry this person. Now I'm in all this difficulty because of you. So we have the same kind of temptations then as the Hebrews just led out of Egypt. While we're waiting for God, what are we going to do? What are we going to fill the gap with? What are we going to fill this gap with? What are we going to, in this period of waiting, is it enough for us to say, Lord, you have proven your fidelity to me. You have taken care of me, and so I will trust you also with this. And so I will trust you also while I'm waiting. And so I will trust you with my future. Or do we say, Lord, you took care of a few things in the past, but clearly you've forgotten about me now. So I'm going to take care of this one myself. And then we put something in the gap. It's called idolatry. And that might be anything. It might be my career, money, my looks, my success, pleasure, anything. Just whatever I choose to fill that gap with. I felt betrayed by God, and so I filled that void with something. And this, I think, is what we see a lot of in our world today. We're impatient with God, and when he doesn't deliver when we want and how we want, well, fine, I'll take care of it myself. I'll take care of my happiness myself. I'll try and fill my life with pleasure. Does it work? You know, when the dust settles, the following day, how do we feel? Happy, joyful, content? Or kind of guilty and saddened, but it'll be better next week. We'll try again next week. And invariably we experience the same thing. So there's this battle for the heart going on. And the enemy is relentless, relentless. As soon as there's a space, a pause, a bit of a gap, a situation where the Lord hasn't intervened immediately, he'll pounce on it. Absolutely like ravenous in that situation to accuse God and to make us feel betrayed or encourage us to feel betrayed by God, that God has let us down. But the Lord doesn't care about human approval. That means nothing to him. But what is he looking for? He's looking for the love of God in your heart. And often that love of God then is manifested, or dare I say, it even grows in those periods of waiting. Those periods where nothing seems to be happening. But I guess I often have the image of it's like a sat-nav. You know, you're driving along the motorway and you have your phone up and Google Maps on. Just because there's an exit doesn't mean you have to take it. That's really disadvantageous in getting to your destination. Sometimes, you know, if you're going from Cork to Dublin, don't exit in Mitchelstown and don't exit in Fermoy and don't just stop exiting. Just stay on the road until you get to the M50. Then you're going to be stopped anyway. You know, but point is, like, just because there are exits doesn't mean you have to take them. Just because there are options doesn't mean you're supposed to be taking one of them. Sometimes the solution, the route is just stay on the road. Stay on the path that the Lord has chosen for you. Stay on the path that also you have chosen. The Lord works with us. So stay going. Consistency. Stay praying. Continue praying. Continue to love. Continue to trust. Just stay. You're on the right road. Don't panic. Stay going. Don't fill the gap. Don't fill. Well, I've been driving now for 20 kilometers. I clearly should be doing something. No, your exit is in 40 kilometers. Just stay going. Just because nothing is happening doesn't mean something is wrong. You're on the right track. Just keep going. So, in these periods of waiting, we can learn so much in these periods of waiting. Because I think that's where our trust can grow. And it's got this. I guess people who are smarter at these things would probably make comparisons as well to how nature works. You plant a seed, and you just leave it there. It just needs a bit of warmth, the occasional shower, no shortage of that in Ireland, and just leave it. And then the seed bursts open, and a little weedy bit of grass makes its way to the surface, and photosynthesis kicks off, and just give it time. Just give it time. Let the Lord work on us. And trust that, well, if he's blessed me in so many ways beforehand, he will bless me now too. So even though it's a period of waiting, it's a period where our faith can grow, a period where our prayer life can deepen, a period where our trust can become much more steadfast, even though nothing appears to be happening. But you're on the road, you're moving forward. You're doing the right thing. Just stay going. Don't try and fill the gap with something else. So we ask the Lord today to increase in us our love for him. And maybe too, there's a lovely expression in German, they call it Menschenfurcht. It's a fear of what people might think. Maybe there's a bit of that in us too. We're afraid of what people might think of us. But the more Christ-like our heart becomes, then the more human approval means nothing to us. We ask that when the Lord comes, or when we meet him, that he will find love of God in our hearts. Amen.